effect of bone infection, these are diseases that usually transmitted via flies, mosquitoes, that's a skin disease, one of them. So you have the Rift Valley, you've got all these diseases that have got vectors that get them around. And what we see is so much epidemic outbreaks here and there of these diseases. And we just need to make sure that we put in place measures to be able to manage that. But livestock on their own, they also contribute directly to the greenhouse gas emissions, because when they belch, they produce methane, carbon dioxide, which they pass on to the atmosphere. Methane is one of the gases that is very toxic in terms of the atmosphere. So livestock contribute through that. So what are we saying about livestock? We need to manage them, feed them in a manner that makes sure that we minimize and reduce the emission of gases throughout the value chain. If I can come to South Africa, speak more closely to home about the impact of climate change. I think if I were a farmer, I would be very worried every year that I have to second guess when the rains are starting. It's not like in the past where you probably would say, we are expecting the rains to start at this particular time of the year. This time it's not the same anymore. That alone is causing a lot of problems in terms of making sure that the farmers can produce the food that we want. I think with the El Nino drought, which is, we always have drought in this region, but as I said, the drought was so intense, it affected the whole region, and more than 40 million people were food insecure because of the drought in the Southern Africa region. But the government here, we work with the government. As soon as we started seeing the signs of this, we started having discussions with DAF on what are some of the things that we can do together. FAO has got its own resources that it makes sure that we start things quickly and get to protect the livestock, crop, assets, and livelihoods wherever it's possible. So there was an early response plan by government which recorded that 227,000 farming households and 21,000 commercial farming units were affected. Climate change does not discriminate between large or small. It affects everybody equally. Of course, the coping mechanism might be different. In addition, an animal mortality of 252,880 head was recorded throughout the provinces in this country. That's a huge loss to the country, genetic resources. This is coming on top of a 2014-2015 season that was equally bad. So you can see these events, they can come much more frequently, and you have no time to recover and get back to what you used to be before the next event comes. Already an estimated 14.3 million South Africans are to be vulnerable to food insecurity, while the food basket has recorded a significant increase in recent months from August 2015 to August 2016. The cost of the basic 23 items on food basket increased by approximately 11%. With climate change, more people could be affected by this problem. What about the fisheries? I'll just summarize the fisheries. The sea levels are expected to be rising along the South African coastline, but a different magnitude in different regions. So it's very variable. Changes in precipitation and freshwater flows, sea level rise and increasing temperatures and coastal prominence have led to changes in physical processes and biological responses in estuaries with an impact on ecosystem services. Range extension of many species of tropical fish into the estuaries of the temperate transition zone have been reported. Shifts in the spatial distribution of cold and warm water intertidal species on rocky shores have been linked to changes in wind, upwelling, and sea surface temperatures. So some of the causes of climate change are really affecting the dynamics, the population of the fishes that are produced in South Africa. So the key point is that the water surface temperature is expected to rise, the sea levels are expected to rise, The water salinity in some cases is going to be rising. The oceans are going to be acidifying. They're becoming more acidic. And all those have largely negative impacts on production of fisheries. So we need to be able to look at that and address the issues as far as we can. If I can just take you to this summary, which was done by the Department of Environment Affairs, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, in consultation with the GIZ, that tries to summarize the drivers of change in the fisheries. We are looking at ocean circulation, the precipitation, that is the rainfall, the snow, whatever, in whatever form it comes, the sea level rise, the rising temperatures, the acidification, and how they affect subtropical, warm temperate and cool temperate zones of South Africa, typified by KwaZulu-Natal, the Wild Coast, the Eastern Cape, the Southern Cape, and the Western Cape. We're looking at highly variable impacts there. You can have both positive and negative impacts. These are from the models that were done by those DIA, DAF, and GIZ. Accelerated sea level rise, changes in river flows, and increased frequency of high intensity coastal storms and high water events poses significant risk to estuary, inshore, and offshore fisheries with potential impacts on lionfish, prawns, and squid. These are the summaries. On a regional scale, KwaZulu-Natal and West Coast estuaries are likely to be the most affected from a structural and functional perspective with climate change. Offshore catchment of important lionfish may decrease if freshwater flow inputs are not maintained to key systems such as the Tukela banks. This is a summary of the work that has been done by DIA, DAF, and GIZ to better understand what is driving the climate, what are the drivers of the changes in the fisheries industry in South Africa, whose basis is rooted in climate change. Forestry. Again, I think the issue of rainfall, the issue of heat waves, the issue of snow, cold events, extreme cold events, will equally affect forestry. The trees, like animals, like crops, they've got a range of temperatures in which they can operate, if I can put it that way. So we are looking at the forestry also being affected by this event. Again, the incidence of pests and diseases that affect trees that are grown here in South Africa. Most of the commercial plantations in South Africa are in KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and the Eastern Cape, with the three major species being the pinus, the eucalypts, and the acacia, the wattle. Because of this, South Africa's commercial production forests are vulnerable as a result of the following. One, the geographical production forest extends over a wide area, but they are fragmented in occurrence, with only 1.5% of the country climatically suitable for tree crops. Individual tree species have climatically optimum growth areas. So you take them out, you put snow where they are not used to snow, they will not grow. You put drought where they are not used, they will not grow. Timber farmers and companies are often vulnerable but not matching site and species, and thus subjecting themselves to losses and reduction in profit margins. So we've got the timber industry, the forestry industry, the forest, non-timber products of the forest also, which are not just timber, the non-timber forest products of the forest are also affected by climate change. But what does this do to land degradation, which is, as I said, that's where we get most of our nutrients from. All the nutrients that we have in our bodies start from the soil. What, according to the South African Farmers Weekly, this is they've got a scary statistic, a very important statistic which we have to take note of. 300 to 400 million tons of soil is annually lost from South Africa. In other words, exporting that amount of soil to the sea, most of it. And if you were to convert that into rand terms, it's quite a lot. Dams in South Africa could be losing between 70 and 100 million worth of storage capacity each year due to sedimentation. This is an old statistic. It could be worse now. The reason is we have the land use that we have contributes to this erosion, be it in the forestry, be it in the agriculture, crop production, livestock production, or any other land use that is not properly done. It leads to loss of soil. And that, when the rains come in terms of floods, in terms of following a drought, like what we have just had coming out of El Nino, very dry El Nino, followed by a very wet La Nina, the soil is exposed to the erosion. And these are interlinked issues that we really need to think about and make sure that we address as wholesomely. Just for information, 45 of the river estuaries in KwaZulu-Natal are in a serious stage of degradation. So we are talking about real issues that are happening. And climate change is not going to help all this. It's going to make it worse for everyone. So what is being done? So definitely it's not that everyone has just been sitting around and doing nothing about this, trying to address this problem. I'm not going to talk about the global climate change issues, but it's focusing on agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. And talk a bit about the FAO in the region, and then FAO and its partners in the country, especially the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries. Some of the things that we have been doing to try and address, get ahead of the climate change agenda. As a global organization, our role is to try and help the countries understand the challenges and opportunities provided by climate change, and in the design and implementation of programs that promote food security at household, national, and regional levels. That is our role as FAO. So we support countries to design programs that climate smart agriculture, agroecology, whatever works in their own setting, that is the role of FAO to support the countries. We promote all the things that are scientifically proven, that are based on the latest scientific evidence. We are a neutral body that is convening powers and brings all stakeholders as equals, all countries as equals. We provide that platform as well. So we work with the countries to make sure that they can achieve their own goals in terms of national development. Regionally, we have been working on what is intended in nationally determined contributions, what are called INDCs, national adaptation plans, nationally appropriate mitigation action plans. So these are looking at adaptation and mitigation. These are all part of FAO's commitment to support member countries participate in important international processes under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. So our role as FAO is to promote climate smart agriculture. We want agriculture that is climate smart, that can produce even with the climate changing. Maybe I should just make sure that we are all understanding it is the same way. What FAO describes as climate smart agriculture, it has three features. The first is that it allows farmers to adapt to climate change through increased system productivity and resilience. So this is the adaptation angle of it. The second angle is allows farmers or land users to mitigate climate change effects through the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. This is the mitigation aspect of it. It enhances the achievement of national food security and national development goals. So when agriculture is climate smart, it has those three dimensions. They will not be in equal proportions. At least you have to have two of them to be able to call it smart, climate smart, and you have the third one not being neutral, as it were. You're never going to get everything giving you all the benefits that you want in terms of those three. But at least two of them have to be there. But what does that mean in the South African context? In the South African context, it means the adaptation, the resilience building. It means the mitigation climate change effects through the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. But it means addressing national food security as well as addressing those goals that are in the NDP. making sure that the agriculture that we do, when I say agriculture, I mean agriculture, forestry and fisheries, addresses the issues of unemployment, inequality, poverty, and food security. That is what will be climate smart agriculture in the context of South Africa. But what guides the FAO's work is their global guiding document that guides the FAO in terms of what we do in climate change. The first is the Transforming Our World, the 23rd Agenda for Sustainable Development, what is now commonly called the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. And it climate change is part of, is addressed in a number of those goals. But also there's the one specific one on climate action, 430. We also have the Sendai Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction. This is the framework most countries on the globe have taken to, they've liked, but some of them have not really adopted it and internalized within their own systems. So these are the global guiding documents in terms of some of the work we do in climate change. At the continental level, the African Union has got a number of guiding documents, including the African Union Strategy for Addressing Climate Change, which is part of the 2063 agenda, Africa Union agenda, where it says Africa shall address the global, just to be clear that Africa contributes less than 5% of the global carbon emissions at the moment. But it bears the brunt. Like I said, what happens in one part of the globe affects the whole globe. So those who emit, the industrialized nations of the world, they emit the most gases, but we all suffer the same consequences. We don't have the same capacity to mitigate, to adapt to this as the other countries, so we suffer the most as Africa. We depend on climate-related activities to produce our food, to produce our fiber, to produce our fuel, and we suffer the most because of that. So the African Union's agenda for 26, Africa shall address the global challenge of climate change by prioritizing adaptation in all actions, drawing upon skills of diverse disciplines, I have to underline, skills of diverse disciplines, and with adequate support to ensure implementation of actions for the survival of the most vulnerable populations, including island states, and for the sustainable development and shared prosperity. This is a guiding principle from the African Union level, and this is where FAO and its partners try to make sure that we are within that, we address those. The vision of the African strategy is to provide the AU as a whole, the regional economic communities, the member states, and other stakeholders with a reliable source of strategic guidance to enable them to effectively address climate change challenges. So the will is there. The political will is there. It's on paper, it's there at the African Union level. Because it goes on to say, the strategy also proposes to carry out other interventions to address some specific priority areas, including adaptation and risk management, nationally appropriate mitigation actions, as well as some specific cross-cutting issues. The African climate change strategy is organized around four thematic areas: the governance issue of the climate change, promotion of research, education, awareness, raising, and advocacy. Mainstreaming and integrating climate change imperatives in planning, budgeting, and development processes, and promotion of national, regional, international cooperation. That's the global Africa, one of the guiding documents. Below that, for the Comprehensive Africa Agriculture Development Program, which is commonly called the CADAP, and this right across the three pillars, climate change is emphasized as one of the cross-cutting issues. To hasten the implementation of the CADAP, the AU also had a meeting in 2014, what is called the Malabo Declaration on Accelerated Agriculture Growth and Transformation for Shared Prosperity and Improved Livelihoods, with six commitments. The sixth one is to enhance resilience of livelihoods and production systems to climate variability and other related risks. So it recognized the importance of climate risks as an impediment to development in Africa. So we have got those guiding documents that guide us in terms of what we do. If you're coming down to the region, there's the SADC region indicative strategic development plan, the RISDIP, there's the regional biodiversity strategy, the SADC climate change adaptation strategy for water, and also SADC is working on what is called the SADC disaster risk reduction strategy as a SADC resilience strategy. So the policy documents, they are there. Are they talking to each other very well? Are they coherent? Are they well aligned? That's what we need to interrogate. We feel there's need for improvement there. But what is the FAO been doing? Supporting countries, basically, as I said, the regional economic community, SADC and COMESA, that is the regional economic community of Southern Africa, SADC and COMESA, we work with them to make sure that we increase the resilience of farmers to climate change and variability. Through provision of technical support to institutions, as well as the people themselves, the people working in these institutions, policy development in terms of at country level, at the regional level, as I have already said. More importantly, we facilitate the sharing of information, of knowledge across countries, good practices, so that you don't repeat what someone has failed. What is failed in another country, we try and make sure that there's a cross-sharing of information around climate smart agriculture. And one of the components of climate smart agriculture that has been quite proven to be quite useful is conservation agriculture. Our role as FAO is to make sure that conservation agriculture practices and options are available to all the countries of the region. Also accessing the appropriate crop varieties that are drought tolerant, early maturing, pest resistant, pest tolerant, and of higher nutritional profile. That is how we think we should be adapting as FAO some of the activities that we are supporting. The surveillance of climate-induced livestock and crop diseases, this again is our role as FAO to make sure that we work with partners across the region. As I said, most of these pests and diseases, they don't recognize borders. We just need to make sure that we work right across the region to address them. And also making sure that there's capacity at the local level to be able to participate in this surveillance monitoring of pests and diseases. I can go on to talk about some of the crops, the early warning systems at village level for grazing. There's also work on diversifying the crop for livestock production, the fodder banks, the different crops for feeding livestock, making sure that we have a wide variety. If one fails, another one doesn't fail. Also making sure that we build capacity around livestock emergencies, the capacity of member states to be able to analyze problems when there's a drought, when there's a disaster. A hazard occurs, we need to be able to analyze what are the problems in the livestock sector, what do we need to do, and how do we design the appropriate interventions to address the problem. So those are some of the things we are working on. Coming closer to home now, some of the things that that has been done by stakeholders in the country. The National Development Plan already identifies climate change as one of the factors impeding with potential to impede development. It's already in the NDP. But also the South African National Climate Change Response Policy, which is administered by the Department of Environmental Affairs and other departments and implemented with other departments, is one step. The starting step to actually say this is how we want to address it in the country. It's cutting right across the sectors, including agriculture. It was initiated to manage the effects of climate change and to contribute towards the global effort to stabilize greenhouse gas concentration in the atmosphere. If I can just enumerate some of the projects that we as FAO have been involved with the different departments, the green economy, which is under the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Green Economy Program, the Green Fund, the Climate Action Now. These are some of the campaigns, initiatives that have been trying to address the impacts of climate change. With the DAF, with whom we work much more closely with, the climate change sector plan for agriculture, forestry and fisheries, the basic approach of the plan is CSA, that is climate smart agriculture, making sure that we have climate smart agriculture, which entails the integration of land suitability, land use planning, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, to ensure that synergies are properly captured and that these synergies will enhance resilience, adaptive capacity and mitigation potential. The programs and projects on weather and climate change, there are programs that are being implemented again by DAF. These include raising awareness, policy document, development of sector mitigation and adaptation plans, conducting vulnerability assessments countrywide, and identifying and coordinating climate-related research projects. Early warning unit, again within DAF, works on making sure that the information is communicated to the users in terms of what are we facing in terms of the weather, the risks that we might face. The risk management, the National Agriculture Disaster Risk Management Committee provides strategic guidance on policy and advice to DAF on issues relating to agriculture disaster risk management. The department frequently responds to hazards such as droughts, fires, floods, and outbreaks of pests and diseases. Plant production and food security, sustainable resource management and use, again within DAF. Then the land care program, which we have been privileged to be working closely with as FAO. I think it's community-based, that's the attraction about it. It's community-based, it's about the communities, they're the center of everything. And the government just catalyzes the process to make sure that things happen on the ground. And this program has been quite, where we've been working together, been quite successful. We've seen some impact. What we have also done is to try and help working with the DAF to make sure that we identify entry points for some of the key climate smart interventions like conservation agriculture. We work together to develop a strategy on how to get conservation agriculture into land care programs. Promotion of the adoption of good agriculture production practices. This is quite a wide range of options are out there, technologies and practices that can be used to adapt to climate change. And that's, we've been working with DAF. As I said, as FAO, we collect all the information that we can globally and put it to use at local level. So we look out there, what has happened elsewhere, what has been successful, what has failed, and we take out what has been good and we think is suitable for South Africa, and we work with DAF to make sure that those are promoted. We also had a project that was funded by the European Union, working in Limpopo and KZN, to try and make sure that communities, at the community level, they get to understand what climate change is. They get to design the interventions that address the problems they face within their own settings. And this is something that we had been working on since 2013 to 2016. At the regional level, we're working with COMESA to make sure that we have all the agriculture plans, investment plans in the countries of the region are climate smart. In other words, all the national agriculture investment plans, these are required under the CADAF processes. The countries have to produce national agriculture investment plans as part of the CADAF process, which is an AU prerequisite. And these plans, what FAO was doing was working with the countries to make sure that the dimensions of climate change are included in these plans. And that will be, if these plans are implemented, it means you have addressed the climate change issue upfront. At least you try to address it. But what this project did for South Africa was to try and establish the coordination mechanism of stakeholders in the area of climate smart agriculture. This is because for you to be able to be a good farmer or to be using your land properly, you need to be sharing. You need to be learning from others. You need to be interacting with your peers. to, and this platform, which is membership cutting across the small, those who work with small farmers and the farm, the large farmers, the large scale commercial farmers of the country, is a platform that brings all these stakeholders together to learn, to discuss, to share, and to support each other in terms of implementation of climate smart agriculture. These are very important platforms, and they are right across the region. We have set them up in, all, in most of the countries. These platforms help in terms of interacting with the policymakers, interacting with the technical sources of technical information on climate smart agriculture. So this is something that we have been, and I might say that there is a CA policy that has been developed through the efforts of this platform, working with the FAO, and the policy is almost complete. I think it's the socio-economic impact assessment was recently completed, which was the last step in the development of this policy. And we are working on that to finalize this one, working with the FAO, with the DAF. We have the national platform, but there are also provincial platforms, Western Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and Northwest Province. These platforms, I think because of the way we're provincial government as well as national government, this is the way we thought it should go. There's also CA training, which is going through the AgriSeta processes to be accredited. Farmer-led demonstrations were also supported through this project, which we were working right across the region, but these are South African components. So these were efforts to try and make sure that we have a critical mass of stakeholders that understand the climate smart agriculture agenda, that are sharing, that are learning from each other, that are able to impart the knowledge from different angles of land use. Recently, because of the drought in 2015-2016, as I said earlier, when we started working with DAF on what can be done quickly through what we call catalytic funds within FAO. FAO provided some funding to make sure that we quickly get into the communities and save the livestock crop assets that are out there. So these are some of the things that have been done. So there's been some work around the policy issues, the upstream stuff. There's been some work in terms of setting up institutions. There's been some work in terms of getting the technologies to the people on the ground, the people who eventually use the technologies. So this is what we have done as FAO in collaboration with largely with DAF. But is that enough? Is that what are we doing? What needs to be done better? What needs to be done more? We have to admit that there are technologies, practices that work out there. They are there, that are working, that can be. And what we need is to identify them, make sure that we scale them up, have more people, have more land under them, have more people benefiting from them. We just need to identify what is the social, what is the economic, what is the ecological boundary for these interventions. Once we know those, we can then work on making sure that those who use the land for agriculture, for forestry, for fisheries, are doing it the right way. And they are doing it at scale, with impact. That is what is required now. And it requires a number of things. If you talk about my talk, I have to cover both the region and the national, because that I was requested to do that. As I said, there are policies, there are practices that are happening, I could say, in a fragmented way. There are practices that have been identified. They are in pilots. They are in one corner of the country, in one corner of the province. What we are looking for now, going forward, from the FAO perspective, is to scale up and have bigger programs that have more impact. And they are there, programs that we can ride on and strengthen and make sure that they become more climate smart than they are now. And that includes programs like LandCare, which I'm quite familiar with how it operates nationally. So we are looking at, we're at the stage now where we are saying as FAO, it's time for impact to be able to make sure that those interventions, those technologies, those practices that are useful, that have been identified to be useful, they are taken out and given, promoted to all those who need to use them, the land users that need to use them. So in terms of the regional work, I think I talked about the Sendai framework, I talked about the CADAP, I talked about all the countries of the region need to domesticate these protocols, these global protocols, and make sure that they are suited, they are put in the right place, adapted to their own conditions. That is what we think should be happening at the regional level. But nationally, I think we need to mainstream climate smart approaches into existing government programs and projects. We have programs that are going on in different departments of government that depend on the land, be they in agriculture, in forestry, in fisheries. We can work with those and see how they can be made more climate smart at the technical implementation level. The policy level, I think the policies are there. Maybe we need to make them more coherent, much more coordinated. But the policies are there. But what do we need to do now to make sure that things happen on the ground? What can we do to Pakistan to make it much more climate smart? Well, the point here is about being climate smart. Whatever the pillars that are there in Pakistan, we have to look at each and every pillar and see what can we change to be able to make it more climate smart. This is what we think as FAO. The country will benefit from a systematic review of all agriculture, forestry, and fisheries policies, programs, and interventions to assess the extent of use of climate-smart approaches. Mm-hmm. It will be important to facilitate mainstream of climate-smart agriculture and other climate-smart technologies in all agriculture value chain. We're talking about the whole food system, be it transportation of the produce, be it the primary production in the field, be it the production of the inputs that go into the agriculture. We need to look at all that and see where can we touch with a small tickle but get the most output. This is what we should be looking. We need to look at those points where we can, with a little push, we can get things out quickly and with impact. The key word is impact. We need to have impact. Specific instruments, incentive tools to reward innovation in viable climate smart agriculture and approaches with tangible proven employment benefits. As I said, climate smart agriculture in this country entails mitigation adaptation plus addressing the other problems that the country faces, unemployment, poverty, and inequality. So whatever we do, let's look for opportunities for employment, let's look for opportunities for raising the incomes, let's for addressing poverty. We also need research to be going on to make sure that we are getting the right technologies. The environment is continuously changing, and we need to be on top of it and making sure that we are addressing the relevant problems at that particular time. That means a lot of capacity building is required. We need to be building capacity right from the farmer level all the way to the policy makers, like yourselves, honorable members. We need to be, there's need to support capacity for transformational change in agriculture and natural resource management. We need data on impact and vulnerability. What are the sustainable approaches? How do we harmonize? How do we coordinate? How do we work intersectorial? This is one key aspect of resilience building. We don't work in silos as sectors. You need to work right across to make sure that you address everything that needs to be addressed. If you stay in your silo as a sector, you miss out. You miss out some of the elements that need to be addressed. Disaster risk reduction has to be mainstreamed as part of whatever we are doing. We need to be making sure that we are talking about disaster risk reduction. But we need resources for this. There has to be clear need to channel public and private investment into agriculture sectors. we have to be innovative about how we work together, private sector and public sector, to be able to make sure that we address climate change together. There are models done elsewhere in the world that have been used elsewhere in the world. They can be explored, how private sector can work, can contribute to either research or throughout the value chain, wherever it's possible, to make sure that they are addressing the issues of climate change. Pursuing climate resilient development pathways that can simultaneously contribute to reducing greenhouse gases emissions will require integrated approaches and substantial long-term investment. Long-term investment. This is required to be able to address the impacts of climate change. Climate change is not an overnight and gone thing. You need to look beyond. When you look at the farmers that we have in the country, it's quite clear that the smallholders may not be able to bear the cost of doing this. Even the large-scale commercial farmers, they can only do it to a certain extent. So we need to find ways of making sure that we mobilize the resources, both domestic and international resources, to address these issues. Currently, over $25 billion is on agriculture, rural development, spent on agriculture, rural development, land reform. And we need to look within that. Is that enough for us to be able to address climate change? Is it? Do we need to change within? Do we need to change to add to this? These are issues that need to be discussed nationally and see how best to address. Just to highlight how important some of the interventions that have been promoted, like conservation agriculture. One of the greatest energy consumers in agriculture is tillage, the plowing. When we are talking about conservation agriculture, we are saying just disturb the soil the minimum. Don't plow the soil. Don't tend the soil. Don't plow. It defies logic. Everyone grew up knowing that when you are a farmer, you want to plow your land, open up the soil and plant your seed. But you don't have to. That is what we are saying now. You have to disturb the soil where it's necessary for you to be able to drop your seed. That is what conservation agriculture says. How you do it depends on your circumstances, depends on your soil, depends on your level of machinery endowment, depends on the resources that you have for other things. But there are options out there for each and every kind of farmer, whether it's a small farmer or a big farmer who wants to use a 30-wheel tractor, 30-wheel plow tractor, a tractor that pulls 30-wheel plow, the disc plow. But what we are looking for is just matching these options to the different categories of the farmers that we have. Just to show you the impact of emissions from plowing, there is growing evidence that farmers practicing CA experience cost reduction in cost. The diesel fuel requirements for a conventional tillage maize production system will be about 50 liters per hectare. For you to produce maize on 1 hectare, you need about 50 liters. Only about 20 per hectare are required for the no-till system. This is part of the conservation agriculture. So you are talking of saving, just on fuel alone, 60% of the fuel that you... This is a positive case for allocating resources to CSA. We need to look at some of these right throughout the value chain, where can we cut the emissions? And by cutting the emissions, in most cases, you will also be cutting the cost of production. But we need to look at resources nationally and internationally. There is what is called the Green Climate Fund, which is a fund most countries have already committed funding. And right now, I think it's the fund has reached $10 billion. And countries are being encouraged to tap into that. And we're working with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and the Department of Environmental Affairs to try and tap into this fund to see how we can use it to the benefit of the South African land users. The private sector, with respect to the value chain actors, the farmers, the small to medium enterprises, and the SMMEs, and the corporates, they have a role to play. I think it's a question of getting everyone together, convening them, and making sure that we all have a common understanding of the problem we are facing in terms of climate change and agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and how we can address it going forward. There's to be a lot of awareness raising as well. I think we need to be able to send this message right across the country, the importance of climate change and how it interacts with climate, with agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and how it affects the day-to-day living of everyone, because it touches on food security, it touches on poverty. Research, I said it earlier on, we need action, research that informs implementation, research that is relevant. Yes, we need some upstream basic research to understand the processes and to track them as we move forward. But we also need that research that is immediately helping those who are using the land, be they in agriculture, forestry, or in fisheries. I would like to conclude, Honorable Chair, by saying that climate change is already putting stress on food systems and rural livelihoods all around the globe. Today's response to climate change determines how we will feed the future generations. By supporting the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, FAO has a role in ensuring that people interact harmoniously with the planet's ecosystems and benefit from their services, while maintaining and sustainably using biodiversity and all the world's natural resources now and in the future. FAO has a role to play in supporting countries in making sure that links are made between food security, agriculture, and climate change. And FAO remains committed to providing technical assistance to the government of South Africa in addressing climate change in agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, and assisting the country to achieve its national development priorities and goals. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much for the presentation. Do you have any addition from your team? No addition from your team. Okay. No. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable members, that was the presentation from FAO. We can now engage with the presentation, honorable members. Honorable Paulse, honorable Stein, honorable Maloye, honorable Matanga, honorable Tapa, honorable Pandal. Honorable,
thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Spoke about the affecting or speaking about farming or farmers doing their bit for climate change, but what about the rest? Because ultimately, I think it's all of human behavior that affects climate change, not just the farmers and the methods that they use. So we're speaking about a very small sector of the population if we're going to go to farmers and speak to them about their behaviors and their farming methods. In addition to that, farming has become highly intensive because it's profit-driven, which is what makes agriculture bad, is that it's profit-driven and people are doing it for profit, they will, and it's contributing to the degradation of the soil. But what about looking at more traditional farming methods like natural farming, permaculture, also agroforestry that could assist us in somewhat improving climatic conditions that could help push back on the climate change phenomenon. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presenters. I will ask a few questions in the way that it was presented. So I'll ask first a question on weak borders regulations. I know it's not your place to answer, but I think there was a meeting with SADC recently held about what is going on. Is it maybe possible to, if there's anything that came out of that meeting, because I think some of the concerns, as you've mentioned, these pests are moving across borders, so that when something happens, say up north, you know, already some kind of test could be done and people could prepare in other countries. So I think that is one of the questions. Then I would have liked to ask you about greater resilience on groundwater as weather patterns change. Groundwater has to come from somewhere, so how do we prepare for that? We can't just keep on, I know here in Cape Town now more and more people are drilling boreholes, but the water needs to come from somewhere, so how do we prepare then for that? And then linked to that maybe is the rising sea levels. Do you think it's a good idea to look at desalination? I think at the end of the day people will almost be forced to do it. But what tests were done to look at the impact of desalination then on climate change, if any research was done on that? Because, you know, we're trying to solve a problem and maybe by doing that we're creating another problem. And then my second or my last question would be on the best way to ensure that people do move towards climate change methods. You know, it's all good and well to say people need to move towards it. In your work across countries and Africa specifically, what do you think is the best way to ensure that people do move towards it? They must be, you know, outside of the fact that people themselves must realize that they are contributing towards climate change. What kind of methods can be used from a government's perspective to try and ensure that people actually do move towards that? Thank you, Chair. And it's profit-driven, so obviously people, you must either tell them you can make more money or this or that or whatever, so, but I would like to hear from you. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. How I wish the department was set to present immediately after your presentation. It would have made our work easy as members of parliament. Just to establish as to whether, as South Africa, particularly the Department of Agriculture, whether are we on track. But the first question which I would want to pose to yourselves as a secretariat of member countries, do you have any monitoring mechanisms to monitor as to whether what the member countries are submitting to you, are they implementing what is contained in those submissions? Because you might have nice policies and so on, but if you don't implement those policies, and all the time you report, this is what we intend to do, and so on and so forth, but there is no, it doesn't help. Do you have monitoring mechanisms? Just to establish as to whether are they doing those things. If they are not doing those things, when you interact with these members of parliament, you are then able to say that your country has got these policies which they have presented, which are very good and so on paper, but as it relates to implementation, we are not getting there. Because that will be my interest on that aspect. And the other matter which I would also want to raise, you know, in your document, you are indicating that Africa contributes less than 5% of global carbon emission, less than 5%. Now, do you think that as Africa and as South Africa in particular, will we be able to succeed to stabilize the greenhouse gas in the world without the cooperation of the other important role players, particularly your big countries, China, America under President Donald Trump, Russia, Germany, and so on. Without them, will we succeed? Because our contribution as Africa is just less than 5%. But they are playing this bigger role and so on and so forth. And this problem is not only here, it is all over. And they are, the reality of the matter is that they are causing this problem, those big countries. They are causing this problem for the whole world. And from where I'm sitting, I don't think that they are cooperating. But I will hear from you because you are the secretariat of member countries and I suppose they are member countries. Are we getting the necessary cooperation from this from these big countries? And you know, I'm raising this thing because in Africa we are the worst affected from where I'm sitting. I'm not sure what is happening in other countries. I know that in America you go to Texas, to that piece of the state and so on, you will see that they are affected a little bit. But when it comes to Africa, it's bad. For an example, Madagascar, cyclone Inawe, I'll call it in Xhosa, Inawe, cyclone Inawe in Madagascar. And the aftermath of cyclone Inawe is what happened in KwaZulu-Natal now recently. The massive waves in KZN as a result of cyclone Inawe. The extremely high winds in Cape Town. You know, it could not complete the sports that I like, the cycling, because of those massive and extremely high winds and so on, which I believe that is caused by what we are discussing today. Water shortages. You know, it's a problem that very soon in Cape Town we will not have water as a result of this particular problem. You go to Mozambique, you go to Zimbabwe, and so on, floods all over. But where is the problem? We have these policies you have just presented. AU, Southern Africa, South Africa, nice policies, we know what to do, and so on and so forth, but we are contributing less than 5%. The big guns there who are causing problems, they are not cooperating. What do we do? And we have to do something about it. Because it is not only affecting Africa, it is affecting each and every human being in the world. Thanks very much, Chair. Or is she gone?
No, she's not gone. Thank you very much, Honorable Mapanga.
Chairperson, greeting to everybody in the house. My question, Chair, is with regard to the fall of armyworm. I just want to find out whether is there anything that has been done to control it? Then the second one, which I believe is the last one, it's with regard to the co-learning and innovating for climate resilience cropping system in Southern Africa. There is only two provinces which has been mentioned there. So, well, it is very commendable that the project was successfully implemented and it achieved very excellent result on those two provinces which has been mentioned. So I just want to find out that is there a plan to introduce this project in other farming provinces as well? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kappa.
Thank you, Chair. Fortunately, some of my questions have been touched here and there, but I'll let me start with this one. Do you envisage or do you experience any resistance or unwillingness or no proper response to your efforts of awareness on this the phenomenon? Because you see, I remember that there was once a conference of doctors discussing about how dangerous tobacco was, and during break they went to light their cigarettes, all of them. So there would be reality here. And then there is this part also of technology. There is intensifying of use of technology I know it for a fact that there are people who want to design implements that would go as far as 3 meters, 4 meters working on the soil, while at the same time we want to promote the minimum or zero tillage. In this case, I'm sure we're just correcting the challenge of people who want to develop their heavy implements. At the same time, we know that they are dangerous to the soil in this conservation. So we have got that contradiction, and how do we address that? Now, there is this part of, or there is this, there we have big countries also who have their economies, but they are also linked with their economies. Are they not having a serious impact on what we are trying to do? Because you know what we are doing, you know that there are countries who have the capacity to export their poverty to us. So are we not having a situation of countries like America and so like we were mentioned by Honorable Maloy, that there are these countries who have also a contribution in our situation. Now, lastly, there is this mention of need of resources. I think personally I like that one, but I also like it in a way that really it assists the department so that anyone can believe that it is true that for them to get out of the, of this problem is resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Fandam.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for all the information you have given us. It does help a lot. I wanted to, you know, I don't want to be a doomsayer, but, you know, if you look at the main contributor and the cause of what we call now climate change, and I know we are only talking about agriculture and forestry and fisheries at the moment, but you must go and look at the bigger root cause of it. And I think, if I think about it, I mean the population growth and into a lesser extent the migration of people throughout the world causes a lot of our problems. Now, you know, the more people, the more food we need, the more emissions there are, and we are trying to mitigate some of these, shall I say, side effects of what that is causing. But what are you doing to address the root cause? Are we doing something about that, or are we just going to let it explode into what it is, or what it will become? I mean, if we have 5 billion people in the earth now, we will have 7 billion later. So that is a big contributor. Are you looking at that? Are we addressing that issue to see if we can, you know, a win on that side would be a double win, because you won't have to mitigate anything if you don't have that. And then I saw the your statistics and your graph on rainfall. Do you have that by province? Because if I look at the climate change and the high temperatures recorded, most of those towns are in the Western Cape. They are concentrated in the Western Cape. I say most of them, not all of them. But it would mean that some provinces are affected more than others. The Western Cape and the Northern Cape, let me say that. And I mean, you can have the averages over a year. Some people have more, other people have much less. And then to get a better picture of where the problems are in South Africa itself. And do we concentrate on those areas where the problems actually exist, or where there are more evidence? And do you actually speak to those provinces, and do you work with them to see if they could also mitigate, or, you know, where the big problems are? It's already been said that the Western Cape is a little more affected with the drought now, with the water shortages and everything. And surely you would be one of those people advising as to where we should focus our resources to help the people. I just wanted to have a better feel on provinces and the drought and the rainfall and how that is. So I would like to see that by province. Maybe you can share it with the committee, and then the chairperson can distribute it for the last 100 years. if I look at the graph, it actually looks quite not so bad if you look at the rainfall, because the upside is that it's been the lowest, now it can only get better. If you look at it, it's never been that low before, so it can't go lower. I mean, if I look at the graph over the last 100, if I'm a betting man, I would go with a lot of rain coming. So I would like to see that by provinces, because I think there is a fuzzing of the picture if you look at the gemiddelde. Thank you. That's me.
Honorable Matal.
Thanks, Chair. Commending the presentation, but also requesting that what were some of the things that were presented are not in the slide here. So if we can be given a revised copy, because I think that's what happened. They worked over.
Yeah, there is just their pages are not properly.
They are not there, Chair. If you look at the background on the introduction,
at
the end of that introduction.
What's the end?
I don't know. But
no, we'll rework them.
Yeah.
The order of how they've been put.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, when they said climate change, the two paragraphs, and then there's a paragraph that came in there, which is not here, but yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I think the Van Damme commented to some of the things I was having, because Vandalia, sorry, thank you. It's Honorable Van Damme, yeah. Thank you. My apologies there for misspelling your surname. He spoke to some of the things, because I was asking myself. You know, I'm from Limpopo, and in Limpopo we have certain areas that can be extremely hot. You are Messina, Palabora, they can be really hot. And when I saw the list that are written here, I said, oh my God, I was not aware that it's the Western Cape that is too hot. But probably when you give us some figures there, we will know that, you know, that happened. The problem that I have, you know, this green house gases and the need to try and pollute less, and the fact that we are, whilst we, you know, are a country of extremes. On the one hand, we are a developed country, but we are predominantly an underdeveloped country looking at the demographics of South Africa. Now, for us to grow, we'll need to use every resource at our disposal, including coal, to produce electricity. And you know, for those who know, they say that for now it is cheaper, and the new technology is a bit expensive to use it to develop. And how do we handle things in such a manner that there is a balance between growing and preserving the environment? Well, the issue of water, it's a problem with that is affecting the region. But the irony is that at the same time we have certain parts of the region that is endowed with water. It might not be an area that might need you to respond, but what is your opinion about the integration of the water resource that we have in the region, such that even the drier part of the region can get access or to tap into that water, which is, I think it's enough to can supply the region. Thank you.
Thank you very much. From me, I think that the last part that Honorable Matale has raised, the integration of the region itself as we deal with climate change, so that we are able to utilize the resources available for the region, which include those integration of water, because and the agenda 2063 of African Union. Are we able to make sure that the countries they adhere to that? Because I've seen this outline it properly and adequately, even the issues of climate change. So if all countries they adhere to that agenda 2063, for me, it will be an advancement towards achieving the plan. But the secondly is the accessibility of resources. You know, these international resources mostly is very difficult to be accessed by countries. So I'm not sure whether the evidence that countries are able to get these resources, or is it the lack of capacity that you find in the systems? So do you have any plan to assist in case there is that lack of capacity? And I'm happy that you have mentioned that, I've seen you say DAF, Rural Development and the DIA, they are working together on the issue of climate change. But seated where we are as a portfolio committee, we have that doubt because there are a lot of things that are not going well. Together, working both of in those departments, we've been every day humming on the working those departments working. They must work together themselves. If you look at our minutes or every day we're hammering on those issues. Like the issue of land care, as you have mentioned, I'll take it as an example. You have DIA, which is implemented to this at that direction. You have Rural Development, which is doing its own program. You have DAF, which is doing its own program. And our view as a committee, if there is that assistance, even from yourself, they should be encouraged to have a program that will make impact. And because the major focus of this government is to, as you develop, you must create jobs for its own people. And so it will be important that the resources that are there within the system should be able to, as they develop this country, must be able to create jobs. But if it's little pieces, implemented in a fragmented way, obviously do not make any impact in terms of job creation. So how do we help them to work together, particularly on this program that you have mentioned, and consolidate all the resources and have, if you go in the province, we must be seeing that FAU and three departments has passed, on the land care program. So those are the last question is on the campaign, awareness campaign. I know that you would have, I'm one of those that have attended the recent conference or meeting on the climate change in Marrakesh. There were a lot of civil society organizations. But you don't see this campaign, even after them going to those areas, whoever takes them to this meeting, there is no coordinated even effort of educating society around issues of climate change. Because as one honorable member has mentioned, without getting commitment of human beings again, you might not succeed. So this campaign of awareness, do we have resources that goes to civil society, particularly those that are activists on the climate, for them to be able to raise awareness in this area? Those are my questions. You can then respond.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you, all honorable members, for the important questions you have asked. I will try to respond to all of them, starting with the first and going all the way to the last. And some of them are related, so when I'm addressing one, I'll probably just touch on the other as well. The first question was, we are focusing on agriculture, forestry and fisheries, but the climate change agenda goes beyond that. I think that is well understood and accepted, but within the UN family, there are other agencies that deal with the other sectors. We are focused on agriculture, forestry and fisheries, but we acknowledge that agriculture only makes a certain contribution, not the most. Yes, you also mentioned some technologies that are, some approaches that are quite useful in terms of addressing. We need climate change by its nature, it's probably best addressed by what has worked over many, many years, which means the traditional systems, they have a role to play. But we can't also not, we cannot ignore innovation and new technologies, new techniques that are out there that can be used. So the agroforestry is an important one, and we're actually working on agroforestry with DAF right now to develop a program on agroforestry. Permaculture, agroecology. Again, it's a question of matching these various approaches, techniques to the needs and capacities of where you are going to implement this. So it's a question of looking at, like I said, we look at what is out there, what works, and then see how we can scale it up for impact. If I can go to the next question from on wheat border regulations, I think this is something that you can legislate for, but sometimes it's very difficult to control. You can never get it completely tight proof that you will never get a pest or you never get things that are not supposed to be crossing. As you rightly said, it's not the turf of FAO to we highlight these issues. Our role is to provide the information, the evidence, and how it's impacting on food security. And these are some of the issues. We have a division on trade, and they talk about these things and provide all the evidence. Touching on the Harare meeting was trying to bring all the countries together and say, what pests are you seeing in your country? What has been the impact? How are you responding? What are the gaps in your response? What do we need to do now going forward as a sub-region, SADC as a region? The four AMIM was one of them, but there was also avian flu, which had been seen in Uganda, killed birds around Lake Victoria. But the worry everyone had was that those birds that had been killed there, they're migratory birds that normally end up in Cape Town, in the southern Cape here. So they move right across. So that was a potential threat. This one is terrible for the poultry industry as well as for human beings. So the Harare meeting, in terms of going forward, what I can say, what is relevant maybe for the honorable members is that there's a huge concern that, like other honorable members have already said, the policies, some of the policies are there, some of the protocols are there, but they are not being followed. They are not being supported with resources. In other words, government are not putting their money where their mouths are. And the Harare meeting made a recommendation that all the surveillance, the monitoring systems around this need to be revamped and be looked at, and the governments need to really support them. With a setup of where we are going to have the national ones functioning, because these things happen in villages, not in towns, the national ones that can detect and share information about pests with smartphones these days. They take a picture wherever you are, where you see it, share it with nationally and get it out of the country so that all the other countries know what's going on. So there's a commitment, some kind of commitment by the countries that participated, including South Africa was there, to say we going forward we have got these mechanisms some countries have, some don't have at national level, but we need all the countries to be on the same page and be able to enhance the monitoring and surveillance on most of these pests and diseases. Groundwater, how do we prepare for that? I think it's a very important question, and it's something that as FAO we are very much working on to try and understand. It's not the solution. It's not the ultimate solution to the problem of water shortage. There's a lot more that needs to be done about harvesting and conserving and using the right technologies when you're producing crops or livestock. So groundwater, like I said in my presentation, it will be a problem actually, because it only depends. It needs to be recharged by what is falling. And if you don't recharge, like in some countries, the boreholes, in Mozambique, boreholes, they have to be dug to the depth of more than 100 meters. And this is not sustainable. And we just need to look at other ways of harnessing, harvesting, conserving, and properly using whatever is falling. It's a very dire situation. Desalinization, that's an area I'm not very well versed about, and I wouldn't like to speculate what the impact of climate change on that. But I guess those in the area will probably do some feasibility assessments to see is it possible really to desalinate at a scale that can support like Cape Town, and what are the implications on not just the immediate, but what are the implications on the water systems, the ocean systems that we are desalinating. As I said, it's not my area. But how do we get communities and farmers to change, to move to climate smart approaches? I think it's a question of incentives. Incentives that have worked usually are a carrot, but just in some of the development that has happened in the world has been pushed by the negative, where people are pushed to the wall. When they are against the wall, they have nowhere else to go, then they realize that this is the way to go, and they adopt what is right. That has happened. That is why the Americans adopted conservation agriculture, because they were in a corner, their land was degraded, they were not producing anything, and they decided to go conservation agriculture. So you can be put to a corner. But we don't want to get there. We have all the information we need to see this. So we want to work out maybe tools and mechanisms and incentives that maybe each different situation will need different incentives. But we need incentives that can make those who are using the land to be attracted to the new and more appropriate approach. Mechanization, the question on mechanization, I think it was we have a situation where those who are making the machines are producing machines that are probably causing more damage to the. And how do we address that? I think it's two ways. It's the users of those machines, those who make life out of using those machines, need to be able to be convinced that they don't need they don't need all the machinery that probably is out there being sold. They need the appropriate machinery that can make sure that they can feed their, they can put their crops in the soil without disturbing the soil a lot. So it's a question of bringing all these stakeholders, getting to the campaigns that we're talking about. This will make everyone understand. Awareness campaign. Why is it? With evidence, with the data on the economics, the financial, the bottom line, what it means if you don't use the other machinery, not the other. Implementation of policies. You rightly put it, honorable members, that there are good policies right across the continent, probably not implemented as they should be. And this is, I don't have an answer to that. I think the government have got the answer to that. They are the rightful ones to be able to say, why are they not being implemented? Is it about resources? Is it about capacity so that the resources, is it about capacity? There will be different issues in different setups and probably for different issues. you'll be having different problems in terms of implementation. So I think an investigation around that to try and see in the South African situation, where are we having the issues, what needs to be done. I don't think it will be a big, it's a task that can be easily done. Who is to blame for climate? The next question on the big countries, the big polluters, are they buying into this? I think, as you all know, the United States of America had been one of those countries that had not been signing to these climate change protocols, the global protocols, but everyone signed the Paris Agreement in 2015. Which is now bringing everyone to say we are, as a global family, committed to climate change, to addressing the impacts of climate change, the negative impacts of climate change. So everyone is on board now. That's why they created this Green Climate Fund, where most of these big countries have put their resources to say we are ready to support. Because they like you all rightfully said, the impacts go beyond each and one individual country. The issue of migration is basically related to climate. It's actually a result of climate change in some of the issues, where the system that used to support the communities can no longer support them, and the community has to move elsewhere to go and find the whatever they need, they were extracting from their own. So it's something that needs to be. I would say most governments are committed now, and it's a question of now just implementing what has been agreed upon. The 4 AMWM, where are we with the control of that? I think it's with us now. It's with us all over the region. It has not gotten to the island states. That is Mauritius, Madagascar, Comoros, and Seychelles. It has not gone to Lesotho. So Lesotho is the only country in Southern Africa, within the mainland, that has not been affected. The rest have been. So we have it. And the reality is, the unfortunate reality is that it might be with us for we don't know when. So there's need to not looking at the current infestation, the current attack that we have got now, the outbreak we have gone through, should not be our major focus now. But the problem with this pest is that it's polyphagous. It eats so many plants. It's not like the other African armyworm, which just is one main focus on grasses, maize, mainly maize. Our concern usually is on maize and pastures. So when the maize is gone, it goes. But this one can go to tomatoes, can go to vegetables, can go to... So when the maize is gone, it can transfer and continue to multiply. So we have to think about the winter cropping and beyond. Nicaragua, when they faced this problem, what they did to actually control it, they just banned growing of maize off-season, nationally, just a ban like that, no maize, and that's how they managed to control it. So we might have to take measures that make sure that we don't have this pest. But it's with us. And if we don't control it as a region, it's pointless controlling it in one country. It's totally pointless. But they will just come from another country. So it's a problem that we have to face, and we are working as FAO with universities, with international research organizations, to try and make sure that we get on top of this problem, and at least develop mechanisms for sustainable management of this pest in the future, if it stays here. The assumption is that our cold winters might knock it down and completely get it off, but we never know. The problem is we get winter here and it's summer within Africa, summer elsewhere, and we it will be breeding there and then it flies this way. So it's something that we are working on and trying to make sure that we manage it as a region. The coal learning project, this was just a pilot, the coal learning project that is in Limpopo province and KZN. This was even in Limpopo province, there were just 3 sites in Limpopo province. To just work with a few communities, to work with them to see how best, one, they understand what their issues are affecting them as climate change, from climate change, and how they can address them. But it's pilot, and the idea is what is good that came out of there should now be taken to other areas where it's applicable. That was the thinking around this project. Do you experience or response to envisage negative response to climate change? I think of course you've got some senior political figures internationally who have, some will say they don't believe in it. But basically, I think most governments agree that climate change is a reality that we have to face, and it's an impediment to development. Because of the signing of the Paris Agreement, I would say most governments are for addressing the impact of climate change. Technologies, zero tillage, contradiction with producers of implements. I think this is what I touched on earlier on, that we, it's a question of getting them to provide all the evidence from those and make those who produce the machines and those who use the machines bring them together to understand what that they should be using, what they actually need, not just because it's out there, but that's what they need to produce. There's a difference, there's a big difference on what you need to produce and what you can use. The need for resources, I would say the climate change agenda is so big, and I've not done an analysis of what DAF requires to be able to properly do implement climate smart agriculture across the country. But all I know is there's need for investment in this sector to make sure that everything is done the right way. Honorable member touched on the population growth is one of the underlying drivers of climate change. Yes, it is, but as FAO, that's not our territory again on population issues. The UNFPA, our sister agency that deals with those, and also UN Women, they work on these issues of population. But what we do is to make use of the land resources in a way that is sustainable. I accept your point on the graph that maybe we would have shared the information at provincial level, that we can look at and working on it and then share with Madam Chair, Honorable Chair, on the provincial data. But what the purpose of that was just to highlight the maximum temperature that we have experienced. So these are new maximums, and we wanted to show that with so many new maximums in the country. That was the point. So in terms of how it varies, definitely it will vary from province to province, and different provinces will be affected differently by the impact of climate change. And that's something that can be done to analyze further and provide the information later. The core use and development, that is a very important question, but very difficult one as well, which from my where I'm sitting as an Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, I all I know is we need to look at renewable energy as the long-term solution. Coal has to be used appropriately, and again, once you use coal, you are emitting gases in the atmosphere. But you have to look at the trade-offs. This is a question of trade-offs. What are the benefits of using the coal? What are the disadvantages of using the coal? These are what needs to be worked out. It will be appropriate in some cases where you are addressing unemployment, you are addressing poverty, you are addressing inequality, the national issues. So you have to balance, look at all those, and say, well, as a country, where do we go? Integration of water in the region. Again, this is something, I think there's a big meeting in Durban next week on integrating water in the region. And this meeting is trying to see how, starting from water, how can the region work together to to address some of the constraints facing the agriculture and other sectors that use water. I would say it's important to make use of the resources as a region, but there will be challenges in terms of moving some of the resources to be in the place where they should be. There's potential for renewable energy, electricity, there's no doubt about it. I think we've got the long Zambezi, which is probably underutilized, but the impact of that on other ecosystems is not very clear. So we probably need to look at feasibility studies on the water issue. But I'm sure the meeting in Durban will be touching on this, and FAO will be there to listen and hear from the countries what they are planning in terms of integrating water resources. Agenda 2063 is an African framework that tries to guide the countries. It just guides, you know, like what most of the government committees, government platforms, is a guide. And the government decides on its own that whether it's going to do what is in the guideline. So the Agenda 2063 provides a guideline, but the countries don't seem to be adhering to that, and for different reasons, I would suppose. But what is clear is that there is a guiding principle, there is a guiding framework for the whole of Africa. I think you could, I think you're in a better place than us to be able to check with the government why are they not doing, why does the government not implement the Agenda 2063 as stipulated. Why are the technologies not, is it a lack of capacity, is it a lack of resources, why are the technologies not reaching the communities? I think it will be variable, even within the country it will be variable. There will be issues of capacity, there will be issues of resources in some cases. All it needs to be done is to make sure that you strike the right balance there. FAO can assist in terms of resource mobilization. As I said in my presentation, we are working with, yes, madam, believe me, we are working with the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, Rural Development and Environment. We have had three meetings since January where we are working on this program, where we are maybe this, a big program where they all fit can make them work together much more closely. I'm sure they are working together closely, but it is from your way you are sitting, you would like to see them do better than that. And this program we are discussing, we are trying to formulate, we are just trying to formulate and apply for the funding. It's not even guaranteed. But we've just sat together, we've had three meetings together to sit as stakeholders and say, what do we need to do for South Africa to have impact? Our key word is impact. We have done projects all over the country with impacts localized. So what we are saying now is, can we work together and have impact starting as the three? There will be others that will probably, DST might have to come in, DTI might have to come in as well, because they have a role to support what we are doing as the agriculture land use department, the stakeholders. So that touches on fragmentation. You mentioned that I'm not going to speak to that because I'm not so sure about what all the programs that they do in DAF and rural development and other departments. But big programs where they come together will probably help in terms of impact. Awareness campaigns, they need to be coordinated. And I would like to thank you for highlighting that. The coordination of campaigns, the coordination of awareness raising. Different things mean different things to different people. Climate smart agriculture will be interpreted differently by somebody else. Conservation agriculture will be interpreted differently by somebody else. What this coordination does is makes everyone speak the same language. It makes everyone understand the issues in the same way. And it's quite critical. That's why we said earlier in my presentation that it's, through DAF, we established what is called the National Conservation Agriculture Task Force, which was just making sure that what is called conservation agriculture in South Africa, all the members understand it the same way. whether they are small scale or large scale, or they are supporting small scale or they are supporting large scale. And that platform was there, is there, is functional right now, and that is its role. And it gets all this information out. And with the coordination of these campaigns, I think we can get somewhere. We can really convince all those that need to be convinced on climate smart agriculture and climate change. Those are my responses, our responses to the questions. Maybe if colleagues want to add.
Thank you, Chair. In addition to what Hope has mentioned on resource mobilization, it is important for the portfolio committee to note that through Africa regional conferences that were held, I think there were some issues that emerged in terms of within the countries. It's important that the FAO come with this instrument of counter-programming framework, which defines what the government and FAO intends to achieve within 3 to 4 years in areas of agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. It is important to note that it is another instrument which also brings together various departments, for example, agriculture, forestry, fisheries, forestry. So it's something that we're currently in discussion with the department to make sure that we come to a programming framework. The important part of it is that it comes also with the resources that may still be mobilized outside the government, maybe between the parties, maybe approaching various development partners to fund such initiatives. Just to add, but it's not the main issue, but this one is specific for Green Climate Fund that is currently being discussed with the departments. But I think that's something that we're currently discussing to also look at the bigger picture.
That was the question, honorable members. Any other follow-up questions? Mine would be on the, starting from here, in South Africa, the president has launched PAKISA on agriculture. The question is, have we included the climate change on the work streams, and if not, how is it going to work? If then, do we have any resources that will help? Because one of the observations that we have is that there is a need to mobilize resources in most of the work stream for them to work. So your response to that, Honorable Maloyi and Honorable Paulson?
No, thanks, Chair. I'm not sure whether this question is directed to you or to the department. The Duda Absuguta. You know, Chair, I'm raising this question because we are told that it is now in Limpopo. And my worry is, are we ready to deal with this problem, which will be coming across and so on, or are we going to be late again in dealing with this problem? That's why I was saying I'm not sure whether it should be to them or to the department. But the other one, which is just a comment, now, you know, more often than not, colleagues and other honorable members will indicate that, you know, when you go to other countries outside South Africa, people are happy with the work that we do, and it seems ourselves on our own, we don't appreciate what we are doing. And I'm happy to hear that as South Africa we are doing very well. We have good policies in place and so on. We know what it is that we want to achieve. But, you know, as an oversight committee, we don't only believe in theory, because a theory without practice is just useless. Just useless. You can write nice things on paper and so on. But when you go on the ground, and that work is not there on the ground where we belong, then that theory does not work and so on. So this is what we believe in. So, Chair, based on that, I think what the department should do after this engagement, which is an important engagement, is to ensure that as the portfolio committee, we get that program which we have been requesting for many ages on climate change. What is the program? Where are we? Are we achieving all these things that are written here in black and white, which are very nice, by the way, and so on? So we'll need that report in order for us to be able to play our oversight role as a portfolio committee, because it is important for us to do so. But if the DM or anybody from the department chair is able to answer on the Buddha Absoluta today, they can do so. But if not possible, they can come back when they are ready to the portfolio committee to talk to us about this said tomato leaf miner. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to know if the Food and Agriculture Organization would assist the people from the Philippi horticultural area who are currently in waging a battle to save a very important resource. The Philippi horticultural area is home to the Cape Flats aquifer. Now, an aquifer is an underground dam, and it has to be recharged with either rainwater or, as is this case, it could possibly be recharged from water from the wastewater sanitation treatment plants close by. But what the city of Cape Town is intent on doing is paving over this aquifer to make place for housing development. So the Philippi horticultural area is the only agricultural area in the entire country that is drought-proof because of this aquifer. And we risk losing this valuable place for the sake of development. I'd just like to know if the Food and Agricultural Organization would actually assist the people who are championing the cause for the Philippi horticultural area to try and save this valuable agricultural land from development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, I think it is linked to that, the motto, difficult words. My question regarding the SADC response from the meeting, if there's anything that came out of that, if any decisions. I know decisions are usually not taken at a meeting like that. It's a lot of talk, and then it needs to go to countries. But was there anything taken, I think, you know, in response to the fact that outside of the tomato thing, there's all kind of other diseases currently floating around in Africa that we need to keep an eye on.
The other question is on the food insecure. In your statistics, even in your presentation, South Africa seems to be the highest in having people who are in food insecure. And in 2010-2011, we were at 14.547 and 2012-2013 it went down until 2013-14. Now 2015 goes up. In your own assessment, what might be the problem which can then help South Africa to refocus? If you look at the slide, it's not number, it's not this one.
what might be the problem? Because at some point, similarly, we are doing very well. Now it's going up again. So what might be the challenge in this fragmented implementation or lack of funding on the on the production side of on the production side of what might be the challenge?
Thank you, Honorable. I will start with the PAKISA work stream and climate change. I think the work streams are setting the agenda at a reasonably high level, and what is required now is, as implementation starts, there's need to really look at what are the actual interventions and how can we make use of those climate smart approaches. So I think that is the approach the program can take to address that. On Tutu Absoluta preparedness, I don't think I can respond to that. As you rightly said, maybe the department could respond to that. But all I can say is it's just like the follow-up again. It flies. It's a moth. So you are looking at something that can just cross the border, whether you like it or not. So how prepared the department is in dealing with this? There are many things that can happen. You build capacity to it's a new pest as well, but it behaves like some of the things that we know already. But as we speak, the countries of the region are meeting in Arusha, Tanzania, to discuss this very same problem. And South Africa has sent the delegation there. This very problem we are facing is Tutu Absoluta. So it's something, hopefully that meeting will come up with what the region needs to do. Because the region is looking at it as one region. What is it that we can do about it? I totally agree with the Honorable Member that we need now to see what is happening on the ground. You need more evidence of what we have said. We work with DAF or rural development, or we'll be able to share. And I'm sure they are also prepared to do the same, to share with you whatever documentation or physical visits to where these things are happening. The problem with the aquifer in Western Cape, I think as an organization our first primary entry point is the national, and from the national when there's need to go to provinces, it's usually guided by the department's priorities in terms of what needs to be done. But I'm sure the department can look at the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, and maybe the other related departments can look at that if it's a specific problem that needs to be looked at. But as the FAO, we operate at the national level. We start with the national level. That's where we go. The food insecurity numbers that you, Honorable Chair, you are referring to, I think these are figures that come from the South African Vulnerability Assessment Committee. This is a committee that looks at assesses the food insecurity in the country. Each and every country of the Southern Africa region has got this committee, and they provide the figures to us. So, in terms of why is it happening like this, I think the Department of Policy Implementation in the Presidency has been working on the National Food Nutrition Security, leading the development of that, working with DAF and other departments, of course. But probably they'll be in a better position to say something about the figures, how the figures have been changing. Yeah. And also working with the SA staff on these numbers. This is where the numbers came from. But as FAO, we work with them to get the numbers, but I cannot, where I am sitting right now, be able to explain the changes in the numbers.
I think those were the all the questions, Honourable. Maybe if I missed something.
No,
okay. The tutor absoluta, because the subject meeting looked at tutor absoluta, the avian flu, the fall armwen, and the other zoonotic diseases, those diseases that can be transferred between animals and people. And the same issue for setting up its surveillance, monitoring, better equip the countries, forming networks that are country-level based, then they feed into a regional so that we are all aware of what's going on. That is the idea. And this meeting in Arusha, Tanzania, is going to elaborate on some of those issues to try and make sure that we have concrete action that can be undertaken by the countries to address this problem.
Ernie, are we happy with the... Maybe the last one from my side, it will then be the... Looking at your working with government, don't you have the structure that should work with the legislature? So, because I was just looking into the good program that you have throughout the system, from yourselves to national. If you ask me, South Africa has got a beautiful MDC, but how will that implement if there is no strong oversight? So which I know there is African Parliament, I know there is a, I'm not sure what the CPA does come in. So the coordination part of that, such that the oversight become very strong, and even with the, you know, the, like the 2063 framework of Africa. So instead of the head of state sit there alone and determine the framework, and their government not implementing, no one says as the state of the head of state, but you were part of this meeting, agreed to this framework, why is not implemented? So no one is raised. So how do we get it right there at that level? Particularly if the African Parliament is the right body to do that, so that we can engage with them and all those things.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think it's a very difficult question from the Secretariat or the members, as FAO ourselves do. But what we do is we try as much as possible is to provide the evidence that things are happening or not happening. And whether the members actually adopt those, it's up to the members. And we really can't go beyond. As they always say, we are sovereign states. This is a sovereign state, and it will not be told by the Secretariat what to do. So we are kind of bound. We can't do much beyond providing the evidence. When the members now request us to assist with taking things forward, we are very much willing to engage with the members. But we go as far as just providing the evidence on what's going on and what can be done better.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. It was a good listening, Chairperson. We learn. I'm sure we'll answer about tomatoes. But also, FAO would have answered about tomatoes on the regional level, because it would be forever difficult to deal with it when it's on all these borders of South Africa and is not fought there. You have your Mozambique, you have your Swaziland, you have your Botswana, you have your Namibia. So I think the coordination of SADC will also help us a lot in dealing with this matter, whether it's a tomato eater, whether it's a maize eater. whether it's a beef eater kind of a disease. That's that. They will answer, but it also does reside on budget, Chairperson, these matters. Maybe which is a homegrown kind of discussion. It does reside on budget. For instance, when you get brief about this army worm and the preventative measures, you think you would sit then the comfortable. But preventative measures are never cheap. Preventative measures are never cheap. They are only cheap because you don't have to fight the consequences. But in all government actions, preventative measures are not taken very serious, maybe except in health and others, but in general life, we don't take preventative measures. They were telling about civilians, about nets on the border, about laboratories on the borders, and all that kind of thing. I think we are zero on those matters to go and create such infrastructures. So we'll work on that. But Honorable Moloi raised the issue of brief. I think it will need, maybe at a later stage, a joint brief of these three departments, because the lead department on these matters here is dear more than DAF. So while on agriculture specific, but the overall kind would be dear. Maybe that kind of joint, and I would love to know how far have we gone on these joints, because to me it's more administrative than political. So maybe the officials will help us here to deal with those matters so that we understand. The last one, I must say, the information is good and scary somewhere. Again, Honorable Moloi mentioned the name of a man here. He's called DJ Trump, who says that he thinks we're joking about this thing. That's what the guy is saying. He thinks that the global warming is a joke. Now, he's saying it. How many others that are saying different in the boardroom and different matters in the actual doing on those that are causing 95%? Well, 5% serious, and yes. So it will, the world, United Nations, represented by FAO ourselves, will have to help us at one time. But how serious is the world taking in action, not in boardrooms? Not in boardrooms. In boardrooms seems like everybody's fine and doing. But really, the actions, are they? Our own BRICS relationship, are we working on it? The West, the North Americans, and all that kind of thing, on their 95%. Because it looks like we push as much as we can. But if we push 5%, I don't think it helps very much. The very last point, the water issue, you talk about the regional integration. Maybe we'll talk about it later, of the South African integration. For instance, our engineering thinking, has it come on board to say there'll be bigger space of big rain and no rain? Have we come on us? If we approach biblical approach, there were 7 years, good 7 years and bad 7 years, with those fat high fats that were seven, eaten by seven that were thin. So has that come that there will be seven fat high fats years? Is engineering taking that on board? For instance, we have a lot of rain in the north. Where is that water going? at the present moment. So you have just opened the sluices and all that. Where has that water gone? When the time comes when there is no 100% of Vile Dam, what will we do? Where will we get that extra? So it's much broader, because clearly engineering must tell us what do we do with that integration, with the reservation of that. So there is so much. I was speaking to Devon people this morning, it's raining. And whenever you go there, it rains in Durban. Well, last Friday we left Cape Town with bright blue hot. We nearly did not land in OR because of the rain. So they have already told us that they'll have to spend some time. Raining. So that integration also, it does need to be looked by ourselves here. How do we do things? But let's hear Tomato. If we are ready for, I think this animal understands our economics, because our 40% of tomatoes in Limpopo, so maybe understand the economics. That's why it moves to Limpopo to deal with tomato.
Chair, firstly, just to say, I know a media release was issued on the 4th of March. That gives a sense of the preparations we're making in terms of establishing an early warning system. That would include the producers, that would include the research organizations, that would include the suppliers of the chemicals that may be required, and putting an alert on our borders to warn the travelers not to bring host material. So some work has already started to pull together the various role players and have a surveillance mechanism in place. Perhaps just to make a comment, Chair, on the slide that you talked to around the decrease from 14.5 and back to 14.3. At the time of the reduction, part of the contributory factor was the introduction of the grant system, because our food security problem, it's not really more around the production rather than around the access. That's why you have more urban people who are food insecure in relative terms to rural people. It has to do with the access and therefore the income and the food prices, and that with the growing population over time, we have gradually been increasing this number up to where we are back to the 14.3. I suppose on the Pakisa, Chair, if you don't mind, I'll talk to that when we present next week. But we have two initiatives on Pakisa that are dealing with not necessarily climate change as a whole, but some components in terms of water and felt management particularly. But it has not been the major issue in view of the fact that Pakisa limited itself to certain immediate things, but also recognizing other initiatives. And it is expected that those elements of climate will be incorporated into the various commodity value chains that are in the Pakisa. Thank you.
Okay. Sir, you want to say something?
Thank you, Honorable. I think I was just following up on the Twitter absolute that, as I said earlier on, I think the regional approach is the way to go. And the meeting that is happening in Arusha now will be able to provide more guidance on how we do an integrated, coordinated, harmonized control of this pest as a reason.
Thank you very much. That was the discussion, and we want to take this opportunity to thank you, Honorable Members, DM and the team from FAO, for the input of the information that we have shared with us as a committee will continuously engage with yourselves and the department to make sure that indeed through our oversight we are able to reach the ultimate goal of making sure that we move towards the smart agriculture to deal with the climate impact, the climate change impact in our sector. So we'll continuously engage with yourselves for more information and work together with the department and relevant other departments that are affected most. Because one of the things that we've picked up is that that framework 2063 has got timelines, which it might be very good if the departments and other departments can utilize it, particularly on land degradations and soil erosion. But there is a timeline that the African countries have put for them to be able to realize the objectives. So it will be very important. And thank you very much again. you are now released.
Thank you very much. We also appreciate the invitation, and we are honored to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You are released. Allow visitors to go first, and then that should be our approach. We don't stand up with visitors, so that we give them the respect that they deserve. So we have actually inserted in the program the briefing on the Pakisa, which will be next week. So the department, we're supposed to have the the presentation today, but we've realized because there is a sitting at 2, so we had to shift it to next week. So we'll get a full briefing on Pakisa next week. Yes, that is the changes in the program. We were looking at getting the NEPAD to come and present Africa 2063 framework, so that as we are going to deal with the APP, we'll then be able to be focused ourselves as we engage with the department. So that's where we'll be going. So that's the, I just thought I must indicate that one. So the meeting is at
Chief, so we are only going to meet on Tuesday. No, not Tuesday. Tuesday is the public holiday next week.